Hey gang, Gardner Goldsmith here with you, LG Grande from LibertyConspiracy.com and Liberty Conspiracy Audios. So you can also find our Facebook page and head over there anytime you want. Lots of news stories are culled every day and placed there as soon as people find them. Good to have you here. We're opening with music from a great DC punk band called Government Issue. This is Jaded Eyes. Really like this stuff. And I want to give you a quick introduction, as I often do. Sometimes we miss it, sometimes we just roll right into the show, but I want to mention something special in this case. This show features a conversation that we had almost a week ago with one of our listeners, Gerald, who brought to my attention a story that I think is pretty important for liberty lovers and even for some people who aren't associated with the entire panoply of libertarian thinking. This might set off some of their alarm bells. It has to do with what the FDA is doing to small farmers and or organic farmers under their regulatory schema. It also it specifically deals with fertilizers in the soil and with water. So if you are familiar with American history, if you're familiar with libertarian thinking, you probably are of the mindset that realizes that the FDA, that the U.S. Agriculture Bureau, the USDA, these things are patently unconstitutional, these things. And they also are often used to play favorites with large businesses, with large corporations, at the expense of the smaller guys. Regulations are easier to absorb when you're a large company than they are when you're small, because the margins are bigger. So this is a big deal, and I really appreciate Gerald bringing this information to our attention and joining us on the program. So this is going to be the bulk of the program. Hope you will investigate this material and spread the word to your friends, maybe even link this audio to some friends if you think they might be interested in it. And also, thank you to everyone who's been very positive about what they're hearing on our podcast. I just saw a nice tweet from our friend Ryan, who's a great libertarian. I'd love to get Ryan on the show. And he mentioned our podcast in the same tweet as Lou Rockwell's and as Free Talk Live and a number of other really good ones. So thank you so much. I hope we're doing a good job for you. We'll get right to the show. Be seen. We continue Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Gardner Goldsmith here with you. Good to have you along for the ride. And about 10 minutes from now, we'll be joined by Gerald from Tennessee. He'll be talking to us about a story about, again, how it seems like the federal bureaucracy is trying to tilt things towards big corporations, mega agri businesses, and harm organic farmers and small farmers. So we'll talk to you about that, and this has to do with fertilizers. In just a minute. But I want to go back now to the big story, the major story, and that is, of course, the very exciting and thrilling story about the U.S. government Supreme Court ruling on whether or not entities that it gives special legal protection, that being corporations, must comply with the Affordable Care Act. Under the portion of the statute that forces them, requires them to have to get medical coverage that will cover abortifacient Plan B. And as I mentioned on Twitter, it shouldn't matter whether it's Plan B, which, by the way, is generally not a contraceptive. It is an abortifacient. The conception has already occurred. The abortion is what is caused most times by this particular chemical cocktail. So, anyways, it just causes a massive hormonal surge. But anyway, not just, but that is essentially what it does. So, regardless of what it is and the anger that it inspires and the debate as to whether or not it's an abortifacient or a contraceptive, which is really something that most people don't even bother discussing. But I think if people want to be honest with it, they have to look at it and stop calling it a contraceptive, because that's generally not what it does. It's only going to be, if you take it within the first like couple hours after having sexual intercourse as a woman, then it could be a contraceptive. But otherwise, it's going to be an abortifacient. because conception will already have occurred. You cannot technically call it a contraceptive. Sorry, just like to be precise with the language. But anyway, so obviously the Hobby Lobby case is big because it has to do with something that is so contentious, and yet it should be big even if it weren't contentious. It should be big if someone is being forced to pay, as I mentioned on Twitter, is being forced to pay for teddy bears, okay? But it gets a little bit more complicated because in this case, they're strictly ruling on corporations. Yeah, so let's go back to the court. And we'll talk about this a little bit more as the show transpires. But this is the deal. It was a 5-4 ruling, if you didn't already see it. So let's head over here. And here's ABC News, okay? Let me see. I'm on page, there's a 3-page report. Yeah, Hobby Lobby wins contraceptive ruling in Supreme Court by Ariane DeVogue. And it says here, in a deeply divisive case, and I want to give you the heads up, listen to their language. In a deeply divisive case pitting advocates of religious liberty against women's rights groups, okay, the Supreme Court said today that two for-profit corporations with sincerely held religious beliefs do not have to provide a full range of contraceptives at no cost to their employees pursuant to the Affordable Care Act. So there are a lot of words here that need defining. So, for example, they say for-profit corporations with sincerely held religious beliefs. Well, corporations are not people. Although, under the law that is created by the federal government, they essentially make the corporations like people for liability so that the actual people behind the corporations are not held liable and their assets are never put at risk in case somebody sues them. The corporation's assets are put at risk. So the corporation is seen as a person, but the people behind the corporation are not really connected to it if you're going to sue them. It's only the corporation. And yet, it's not a person. It's this weird halfway point. It's clearly not a person, and yet it's considered as a new entity, as a type of person for liability cases when the federal government creates these laws for corporations. So they say two for-profit corporations with sincerely held religious beliefs, as if those now legally created entities have the beliefs, when it's really the people behind the corporations that have the beliefs. Okay? But this is one of the problems we run into with a government that stacks things in favor of corporations and inspires people to incorporate, and then it starts to tell them how they will run their businesses. It is not something the government should do. And I was in a little mini debate with Joseph, a friend of mine on Facebook, and he's a smart guy. And I have yet to mention him, the concept, the idea of unconstitutional conditions, which has already been ruled on by the Supreme Court. And again, they have ruled in very strange ways. They have ruled in one case where people wanting to live in a federal housing unit can't have their Fourth Amendment rights taken away. If they're going to go in there, they can't be forced to give them up on the condition of being able to live there for drug searches and stuff. This is the Cabrini-Green case. But on the other hand, they have Hillsdale College and Grove City College. And they say that they can be forced by the federal government to comply with Title IX. Now, is that just because they're corporations? I didn't see anything about that in the rulings. So there's this weird double standard that they have if it seems like it's politically acceptable to the whatever the majority is at the time in the Supreme Court, then they will rule that yes, your rights can be infringed upon by the federal government. And if it doesn't seem like it's in the favor of the majority, then they'll rule that you can't. So in this case, I would see this as a ruling against unconstitutional conditions, and yet it applies to corporations. And yet, again, we have to mention that in some cases, corporations aren't multiple bodies of people. They have individual sole proprietor corporations now, and yet they are still corporations. So is it possible that the government can set the standards for what you will do if you want to get corporate protection under the law? And can they say, we can set unconstitutional conditions for you, even as a sole proprietor, whereby you will, let's say you start a college, have to conform to Title IX, or you have a private business, and they're going to force you to buy health insurance that runs against your moral fiber. So these are all things that, if they were just individuals, would be very clear, but they're complicated by this other facet, which is that the government has this power to create corporations. It shouldn't be doing this sort of stuff. We should just eliminate all corporate entities altogether. But the government gets a lot of money from people who are involved with corporations. So you're not going to see that happen anytime soon, obviously. I'm just stating the obvious. So what's at stake here, really, is what we're discussing and what's being discussed in the populace are two totally different things. People are not talking about the nuances of corporations in this. What they're discussing here is supposedly the right of the woman to be able to get contraceptive coverage, and they have this flimsy notion that the business owner, whether it's a private business owner or a corporation, is stopping her from exercising her right. When she voluntarily works at this place, and the government is forcing the corporation or the business owner to comply with their dictates. We'll return. Hey, Gardner Goldsmith here with you at Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. Good to have you along, everybody. I hope you'll keep listening and check out our podcast. The podcasts are available at Podomatic and at iTunes. They're free. You can download them anytime you want. Stream them at our Liberty Conspiracy website. And check out some of the things we have to offer. You can also email me at libertyconspiracy@yahoo.com if you have some information you want to provide. Or if you're a member of our Facebook group, you can put something up there. That's cool. Or you can contact me via Twitter as well. It's at Gard Goldsmith on Twitter. I want to turn right now to none other than our friend Gerald, who has been a great resource so often. He is talking to us via Skype right now from the lovely mountains of Tennessee. Gerald, good to have you here, my friend. And I mentioned we're going to be discussing, folks, a subject that Gerald brought to my attention, and I think it's a pretty big one. Gerald, this has to do – first of all, welcome to the program, Gerald. Nice to have you here.
Good to finally meet you.
Yes, indeed. Yes, we're actually on the camera to each other for the first time, which is really cool. So, yeah, good to have you here, Gerald. And I got to ask you, this subject is, it seems, and I don't want to misconstrue this, but it seems like it's another example of the federal government starting to tilt towards corporations at the expense of organic farmers and things like that. Can you tell people what this is about?
Yeah, Gardner, what it is it's called HARPC, and that stands for Hazard Analysis and Risk-Based Preventative Controls for Human Food. And what it mainly focuses on is the microorganisms that are foodborne microorganisms that they're looking at placing these rules to supposedly mitigate. Now,
right.
The rule, the 179-page rule thus far, seems to be mainly with the manure, the application of manure and compost and compost teas, vermicomposting, and which is probably includes blood meal and bone meal, anything that you apply to the soil to help put nutrients where the crops are growing. You know?
So we're talking traditional methods of fertilizing the soil, and as folks, anybody who's involved with farming knows that farmers often will switch crops off or leave a field fallow for a certain period of time because the nutrients are sucked out by the plants that they grow. If they can't do that, then they have to bring in fertilizer. Or if they're starting something up, they need fertilizer to bring in those new nutrients, right?
And traditionally, you know, before the advent of chemical fertilizers, people were, like, digging a hole and dropping a dead fish down in there. you know, remember?
And, absolutely.
And somehow now that all that is seems to be what is being the composting, the animal-based type fertilizers, the natural fertilizers are the ones being focused on, not there's no rules for the chemicals now.
Okay, this is a very major point.
Yeah, this is just for the...
Yeah, they have no rules for the chemical fertilizers made by companies like Dow Corning, made by companies like Monsanto, some of the largest corporations on the planet Earth, which have been getting all sorts of patents for all sorts of things for years with the protection of the government, which have been strong-arming, particularly Monsanto, have been strong-arming small farmers, even if they have one seed on their property because the Monsanto seeds might have blown over. They're calling that patent infringement and things like that. And they have the it seems to be that they have the government on their side. They can take people to court and basically bankrupt them. And now we're seeing the government, through these fertilizer regulations, starting again, it seems to be favoring the large corporations at the expense of the organic farmers. And can you tell us a little bit about what the organic farmers are being required to do now and how long they've got to wait to be able to use? What's this all about when it comes to the specifics? It looks like it's really going to be problematic. And this is stuff that's going to be happening, right? This isn't some theoretical thing, right?
This is... No, this was a proposed rule back in, I think it started off back in 2011.
Yeah.
And a lot of people rose up and heard about it, luckily, and started complaining to their congressmen and senators. And as a matter of fact, I was one of them, and they said, oh, don't worry, don't worry. And, now it's come, they basically went back to the drawing board and said, hey, we'll fix it, don't worry. And so they had been in the process of fixing any problems supposedly that were created by it. And as you see, they've just looks to me like they've just piled on as opposed to solving. Mm-hmm. Now, there was an amendment to the rule, Tester-Hagen Amendment, and that did help some, but it was basically on farms that that produced $1 million or less of gross income a year.
And for any farmer out there, that's gross, not net. For any farmer out there,
correct.
They are hoping, if they can, to be over $1 million gross income, and their expenses are so ridiculously high. For their equipment, all the things that they have to bring in, that $1 million gross is not going to be netting them a lot.
No, it certainly would not be. And just about anybody that has run a business and had employees, had to buy equipment, knows you know what the burden is in just the overhead of trying to squeeze that dollar.
Amazing. Now, it's interesting, Gerald. Tell us a little bit about, for example, fertilizer, manure fertilizer. They have to let something about, what's the waiting period or something? They have to have this stuff sitting around for how many days, like 45 days or something before they can use it, something like that? I mean, all these different stipulations that they've got now.
Some of those are even, you know, more... archaic than that, are progressive. Some of those rules apply to like fresh manure.
Yeah.
You have to apply that to the soil 9 months before you harvest the crop.
What?
Yeah,
it's not even.
Is forget about even growing anything on that field or that lot, and like rotate your crop to another field where the manure has been on the soil for 7 months before you can. And basically, it does it. You know, if you're going to try to plant something the same year, every year on the same field, you're basically not going to be able to use fresh manure.
Absolutely. And if you've got to wait that long, the time frame makes it basically you can only use it once a year, like you say, and you got to hit it right in the growing season or you're screwed. And if you've got to leave that stuff, I mean, you know, I worked on a farm stand, and you know what I'm talking about. You know what you're talking about. If you leave that stuff on the soil that long, a lot of the nutrients are going to be leached right out of it anyway. You're going to have water seeping through that for the whole time. It's going to end up being dry. You can't.
It basically takes the effects of even the benefits away from it.
You know? A lot of them anyway. Yeah. Wow. This is amazing. This is ridiculous. So
some of the other ones aren't quite that bad. If it's treated and if it's approved compost, then if it's approved by FDA and it's treated and you've done all the things, or they have done, they've approved this compost that you're wanting to put on there, then I think it even goes down as far as 45 days.
Oh, wow. Okay, hold that thought. We've got commercials. Gerald will be back with us. Right, Gerald? Right on. We'll return. We return to Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Gardner Goldsmith here with you. All righty. Let's keep chatting about freedom. And a chat is maybe a little bit too light, but we don't like to get too intense about this stuff because you can burn out so badly. But it's just great to be able to connect with people on Liberty Conspiracy or you know, if you listen to Free Talk Live or people who pick up the podcast of the Liberty Conspiracy and email me or, you know, friends on Facebook, that sort of stuff. And one of the great guys I've gotten to meet thanks to the radio show is Gerald from Tennessee. And he's been on via voice before, and he types in comments and things like that. We're friends over at Facebook. And last night after I finished the show, Gerald brought to my attention a story about how the federal bureaucrats and the USDA are starting to layer these new regulations on farmers, and the large corporate entities that use chemical fertilizers, they don't have to deal with this stuff. If you're using organic fertilizers, things like manure, things like that, composting, things like that, then you've got to conform to these new mandates that they're pushing forward. And Gerald, it's great to have you back, man. It's really good. You were telling me off the air that in addition to the things like manure, they have water regulations. And tell us a little bit about those and about these visits that you mentioned. Tell folks about this for water for farms. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's something that will not all of this rule doesn't just hit organic farmers. It'll also hit conventional farmers because of this water rule. Because if your surface water has to be what they're saying, what they're describing as recreational standards, equal to recreational standards, that's the kind of water that you go swimming in. You know the chemicals you have to put in your pool.
That's the kind of. That's the kind of water they want you to have with virtually no outside organic entities in there, like parts per million, very, very low, right?
Right. If you irrigate, like out of a pond or your lake or whatever or wherever other than city water, and you'll have to have that water tested to make sure. And it looks like you'll have to take it to a certified lab once a week and have it tested. And the problem is what if it doesn't test out right for this farmer and he has to start pumping city water onto his crops, you know?
Absolutely. And as we were talking, mentioning off the air, what a great way to give business to even more friends of the government, you know? I mean, this is mind-boggling. And now let's get into some other thoughts about this, Gerald. Gerald, do you want me to mention your last name, by the way? Because I know, you know, oftentimes I mention first name. Do you want to mention your full name to folks? I don't know if you care or whatever. Do you want me to do that?
It doesn't.
Sure. It's Chastain, right?
Right.
Right on. And you and
close
I.
Enough.
Yeah. Good. Good. And we approached each other through Skype and so on because of the show, which is really cool. And here you are, a guy who's listening, checking out issues yourself, something I didn't check out. You know, I'm a dude looking into things just like you, and your mind, you're focused on this stuff. This is so cool that we can get this information and give it to people and put it out in a little bit larger format, you know. Thank you so much for getting this, by the way. And this drives me up the wall because we can look at it on the constitutional level, which is that there is no place for the government to be telling farmers what type of compost they're going to use or anything like that, whether or not they homogenize their milk or apple cider, which is one of the things they did in 1996. All the apple cider had to be homogenized, and that takes the flavor right out of apple cider. You don't cook apple cider. You know, that's a dumb idea, just stupid. It's ridiculous. So all these things that they're doing, they get away with because of this open-ended interpretation of the Interstate Commerce Clause. But we can go beyond that. You know, we're obviously correct on that argument, but, hey, they still do it. It's not like we're going to beat them because they got the numbers and they got the guns and they got the tax power. And they've got the Supreme Court in their pocket, too, you know, most of the time. So we can also make the argument that, on a positive way, free markets solve these problems. If you've got a bad actor who's putting out food that is making people sick, what's going to happen to his profits, right?
That's true, and one of the whole problems that started is that we started centralizing everything, including agriculture. You know, if this was a local or a state problem and farming operation and something went wrong, they could take care of the problem really fast before those foods spread all over the country.
That's a great point. So that's an excellent point. So as they knock out the smaller guys that are more localized, we'll have, and you know, actually that fits right in with that libertarian concept of the larger spheres of control. The larger the area that is influenced, the more people can be damaged and the less opportunity you have to get away from bad things, right? So just like political decisions, if we have further political decisions and bureaucratization that is crushing the small guy and the big guys grow, then if the big guys make mistakes, more people will be hurt. That's exactly what you're saying, right?
Yes, true. Yes,
that is a great insight. That's really smart. And you know, the other thing is, this fascinates me too, because at the same time we have this going on, the large agribusinesses that are using chemical fertilizers are completely being overlooked, and it's still very
rural.
Yeah, with these rules, yeah, and that's really strikes me as amazing, that you can have big corporations like Monsanto, and Monsanto, you know, they do some good things, you know, but it does seem like they like to play favorites in the courts or get favorites played for them in the courts and on the government regulatory level that the small guys just can't handle.
Well, I'm sure Joe's pizzeria down the street would like to have government protection if anybody tries to sue them like Monsanto has, you know? Wouldn't that be great?
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely right. This is very, very smart. Hey, Gerald, I know we've got a few minutes left in this half hour, and I don't know if you have the opportunity to come back in the first quarter of the next hour, but I know there's another story that you covered for us. Can you just mention for us briefly, as we come out of this agricultural thing, what are these? Do you have a name for these rules that people can look up again? What is it called?
Yes, it's the HARPC, which is stands for Hazard Analysis and Risk-Based Preventative Controls. And if you just type in HARPC on Google, you'll see some things pop up right away, and you can go to the FDA.gov and download the PDF for the rules. And I'm sure they're changing right now. They're still trying to hone every little area, but already from what I've read, the information on it is so voluminous that it's already, you have to have a lawyer to understand it already.
Man. And this, it looks like you say it's FDA, huh? Yeah. Okay. Now, boy. And you know what drives me nuts, though, Gerald, is we can sound the alarm, as, you know, some other folks might be sounding the alarm. We can get the information out to people, and maybe they can act and so on. But there are so many things that these bureaucrats and the government people are doing. This is just one of, like, 100 different things. And you and I were discussing this off the air. The amount of time just for the water compliance that these guys in private farms are going to have to devote is time that they could be using to develop new ways to grow things or get things to market or preserve things. All this stuff takes away from ingenuity and development.
It does, and the more time that the owner of that farm is sitting down at a desk doing paperwork and filling out forms and trying to make sure he's complying, his crops are going bad.
Boy,
you know,
man.
Bugs are eating at his crops, you know.
Unbelievable. You're absolutely right. I mean, that is, you know, all I can think of is those days that I was out in the fields picking Swiss chard and zucchinis and stuff, and, you know, corn out, you know, throwing them in the bushel baskets and throwing them in the back of the van and stuff. Okay, we have a couple minutes left. You brought me a story about this guy Corker and the way he depicted something with tax relief. Can you stick with us in the next segment, or do you have to go?
Sure. We can talk about that.
Okay, all right.
Bit.
That is great. So what I want to do is I want to tease people. Now, you've got this senator named Corker that you're watching, right? And what's his first name?
Bob Corker.
Bob Corker. And this is the wonderful way that this guy can depict a tax increase as a savings. We'll just tease people with that. We'll go to the top of the hour news, and we'll come back with Gerald. Gerald will be with us, and he'll tell us about this one that he's uncovered, and it's awesome. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. All right. We'll return after top of the hour news, Liberty Conspiracy Radio. We're bringing it up a notch, Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. Gardner Goldsmith here with you for hour number two. Just going to go straight through on a lot of these subjects. We've got a lot to discuss, and I want to welcome back my guest. Gerald is talking to us from Tennessee, and it's great because we're on camera with each other, although I've got him reduced on my Skype screen. He's like, you know, down on like one of the little blocks here because I got these other stories. And yeah, exactly, Gerald. He's making the square, and I'm like, oh, I want to bring him back up large screen. But we've got a story that Gerald was actually, there are two stories that we wanted to bring to you, the listeners, and whether you're listening to us live at LRN.FM or you're listening to us in podcast form, thanks to iTunes or Podomatic, it's great to have you here, and it's great to have you back, Gerald. I really appreciate you sticking around, buddy.
Hi, Gavin. Enjoy.
Yeah, it's a really, really good thing, and it's good just to talk to you off the air, you know, just chatting and, you know, talking about raising crops and stuff, and very, very cool, man, very cool. And so, listen, you got a story, in addition to this story about the compliance that these organic farmers are going to be forced to do with these new mandates from the FDA. It looks like FDA, not USDA. It looks like FDA. And regarding their organic fertilizers and water, you've got this other story about Senator Corker and what this guy has said that just is a perfect example of the way politicians try to make their aggression look like they're helping the little guy. And this has to do with this proposed gas tax, right? This is the one that's been floating around Congress. Tell us a little bit about what you found, Gerald.
Well, you know, last week when the story came out that he had proposed that along with Senator Murphy, you know, we kind of floated it around and looked at the story and then complained about it a little bit. And then, of course, I get the newsletter from him when he sends something out, you know. Of course, it's all from his office and everything. So I skim over it when I get it to see if I see anything. You know, you might find something beneficial, you know. Every once in a while.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's no that. I was going to say, otherwise it's know thine enemy, right?
Right. It's usually something, you kind of weigh everything there as far as its level of nefariousness.
Well, it looks like you did
That's
find something
word.
Very nefarious. And yeah, and
but,
they want to raise the gas
really
tax. Yeah, they want to raise the gas tax by 12 cents over the next few years. What is it, next 2 years? It's 6 cents and then 6 cents, right? Something like that. Yeah, right. So, but you found something, and I think this is amazing the way they turn their logic. This isn't a tax increase. Tell us what you found. This is great.
Well, the newsletter, and I guess it's linked to his website too, because you can go on to his website and read pretty much the same words, maybe moved around a little bit and a little more detail, but. Pretty much it says the newsletter that I got on this part of the gas tax of part of the newsletter. It says Senator Corkers and Murphy announce a proposal to shore up the Highway Trust Fund and provide tax relief for American families and businesses. And my jaw just dropped. My chin just dropped. You know,
unbelievable.
And I read through the whole article, and I could not find anything to do with tax relief in the whole article. But the big headline is tax relief for American families and businesses. And I just thought that was. And I even looked at the website, and of course, it talks about how that. And I guess they're saying he may be or be able to use the reasoning, well, you know, if the states highway fund is cut short, is reduced by federal money, then that means that in order for the state to keep up with roads and bridges, they'll have to raise your taxes. So, see, we're saving you money by robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Right. They're saying that, well, we'll give you block grants for your highway funds, and that'll reduce what your state is spending on your highway funds. And that's a tax savings. Yeah. That's like,
we're here for you.
Love me, baby. Oh, man. What kind of jerks are these things? Oh, I got it in front of me. Hold on a second. Let me call this up. Yeah, okay. It says, yeah, I love this. This summer, the Highway Trust Fund, which funds improvements to roads, bridges, and transit systems, will run dry and likely halt the construction of any new transportation projects without action from Congress. This will result in a 50% reduction in Tennessee's transportation budget in 2015 and create a $160 billion hole in state budgets. So we're going to increase taxes on you, and they're never going to go down, so that we can give you the money and it'll actually save you. Oh, man, that is just unbelievable. Unbelievable, Jerry. Oh, these guys, it's like I'm trying to think of something. I was thinking of, like, you know, like a guy assaulting a guy's wife or a woman sleeping with another guy's husband or something like that and claiming to
him trouble.
Exactly. I guess the only thing I'm going to probably steer clear of the sexual stuff and go towards more like, you know, it's like they used to have this thing. Bert and Ernie used to have this thing where Ernie had cookies and he was supposed to divide the cookies fairly with Bert, and he'd be like, "Oh, Bert, here you go. I see you've got one cookie there, so I'm going to have one cookie." And he goes, "Yep." And he goes, "And now I'm going to give you another cookie. So you've got two cookies. So I'm going to take two cookies. Now Ernie's got three cookies, and Bert's got two." And Bert's like, "Ernie, you've got more." And he goes, "No, I'm going to give you another cookie. There you go. Oh, I see you've got three cookies. So I'm going to get three cookies. Now he's got six." But he's divvying them up fairly, you know. It's like, there you go, Bert.
There was an old saying, or someone said it, and I've read it the other day. Is something to do with the, when two wolves and a sheep are voting on what's for dinner.
Yeah.
The sheep is not going to come out on the good end of it.
He's not going to do too well. Exactly, man. Exactly. Hey, and by the way, on this, the anniversary of Frederick Bastiat's death, birth, I should say. I want to thank you for being a guy who treads in the same on the same path, Gerald. A guy that, you know, I wouldn't have met if it hadn't been for this show, and who watches these guys. And you know, it's frustrating to watch these a-holes do stuff like this, because this is just patently bogus what this guy Corker's doing with this dude Chris Murphy. It's just bogus. How can they say that?
It is.
It's amazing.
It is. I mean, I don't know. We've got to find a new word instead of using spin, because...
Oh, I think you're freezing.
Spin does not do this justice.
No. Spin does not do it
justice. It's a lot more than spin.
Oh, my God. But it makes you nauseous nonetheless, right? Anyway, man, I know we're going to be coming up to our commercials, but you...
I called it bilge.
Yeah, bilge. That's perfect. Absolutely. I just wish that we could get some sort of comedy show where we could apply these names, you know, like Senator Frank Bilge, that sort of stuff, and just give these people these names. Or somebody should go up to Senator Corker and, like, "Senator Bilge." And they're like, "Oh, no, I'm sorry, that's not my name." "Oh, I'm sorry, I was thinking about what you are."
Yes.
I apologize about that. Oh, my goodness, man. Well, you know, if you ever get the chance, Gerald, we'd love to have you up here, you know, at Pork Fest or something like that. And I know Ian and those guys over in Keene, they're doing the Keenevention coming up this fall, or Liberty Forum this winter. I don't know. What are winters like where you are in Tennessee? Do you get pretty nasty winters?
We have here lately. It's been pretty cold due to all this global warming.
All right, on that
we
note.
We got down to zero.
Oh, no.
We got down to zero several nights this last winter,
and
you can really feel that.
I hope your house is equipped with an Al Gore hot air blower, because those are important. Listen, Jerry, we're out of time. We're going to have to cruise. Thank you so much, man, and I'd love to get you back next week or something. We'll talk some more.
Thank you, Garth.
Awesome.
Fred, jag kan ta lite mer sång i monitorn. Ganska mycket mer sång i monitorn.